Hello chums, me here, back with the latest instalment of Dracula. But before we get into that, a quick update on the progress of the next episode of Underwood and Flinch Underground. Like episode 30, it's another big one. I've finished the text, you know, as I kind of want it to be, but I'm just going through it now, doing a line-by-line edit. So, fingers crossed, everything should be tickety-boo for next week. But there is, of course, an upside, and that is this, episode 16 of Dracula. Now, good heavens, I have to say, what a challenge this episode was. You remember that I thought, you know, doing Mr. Swales, the Yorkshireman who used to sit on the bench up on the cliff overlooking, you know, Whitby. I thought he was difficult, but good Lord, Mr. Builders, the zookeeper in episode 16, makes the difficulty of doing Mr. Swales pale by comparison. Like Mr. Swales, Bram Stoker has written Builder's accent and dialect. Now, when you read it on the page, perhaps in your head, you can follow it well enough. But when you have to become him and say the words as though you were him, well, it becomes an awful lot more difficult. One of the things that Builders does sometimes, that may be unfamiliar to some ears, is to employ the antiquated Cockney use of an H sound before some words starting with vowels. So when he means ears, you'll get hears. For irritated, you'll get hirritated, and so on. Anyway, you can judge for yourself how well I've managed Mr. Builders. If you can't understand a word he says, then I suppose I've done a pretty good job. No, I'm joking. Some of you who live, shall we say, a long way from London, and Victorian London at that, may need to read along with the text of the novel if you have it, but just to be on the safe side. You can find it online easily enough. But anyway, talking of comprehension, I just wanted to read to you from the appendices of the Penguin edition, where there's a glossary on some of the phrases and words that you'll hear in this chapter, you know, just to help you understand. Here we go. What have we got? Virgin Krantz and Maiden Struments is from Hamlet, scene 5. Krantz, apparently, were garlands. The Zoological Gardens are more popularly known as London Zoo, and cetera is etc., meaning, of course, and so on. Harmony is a harmony. Here is the far more common Cockney habit of dropping the H before vowel sounds. And a harmony is a sing-song. You know, everyone getting together and singing together. My old man said, follow the van and don't dilly-dally on the way. And chivying is harassing or attacking. Now, there's something that's not in the glossary that I thought ought to be, and that is jamracks. Now, Charles Jamrach was a leading dealer in wildlife, birds and shells in 19th century London. He owned an exotic pet store in East London that was, at the time, the largest such shop in the world. So when you hear jamracks, you know what that is. And finally, in addition, just to, you know, perhaps increase your vocabulary, a few more words that I'm adding. Badinage is a noun, and it means light, playful banter. Another word is quondam. Quondam is an adjective meaning former or one time. For example, his quondam partner, his former or one-time partner. Okay? Oh, don't worry, there won't be a test later, other than, of course, understanding what Mr. Builders is going on about in
Dracula by Bram Stoker. Read by Mike Bennett.
Episode 16. Chapter 11. Lucy Westenra's Diary. 12th of September. How good they all are to me. I quite love that dear Dr. Van Helsing. I wonder why he was so anxious about these flowers. He positively frightened me, he was so fierce, and yet he must have been right, for I feel comfort from them already. Somehow I do not dread being alone tonight, and I can go to sleep without fear.
I shall not mind any flapping outside the window. Oh, the terrible struggle that I have had against sleep so often of late, the pain of the sleeplessness, or the pain of the fear of sleep, with such unknown horrors as it has for me. How blessed are some people whose lives have no fears, no dreads, to whom sleep is a blessing that comes nightly and brings nothing but sweet dreams. Well, here I am tonight, hoping for sleep and lying like Ophelia in the play with virgin crants and maiden struments. I never liked garlic before, but tonight it is delightful. There is peace in its smell. I feel sleep coming already. Good night, everybody.
Dr. Seward's diary. 13th of September. Called at the Barclay and found Van Helsing, as usual, up to time. The carriage, ordered from the hotel, was waiting. The professor took his bag, which he always brings with him now. Let all be put down exactly. Van Helsing and I arrived at Hillingham at 8 o'clock. It was a lovely morning. The bright sunshine and all the fresh feeling of early autumn seemed like the completion of nature's annual work. The leaves were turning to all kinds of beautiful colours, but had not yet begun to drop from the trees. When we entered, we met Mrs. Westenra coming out of the morning room. She is always an early riser. She greeted us warmly and said,
"You will be glad to know that Lucy is better. The dear child is still asleep. I looked into her room and saw her, but did not go in, lest I should disturb her."
The professor smiled and looked quite jubilant. He rubbed his hands together and said,
"Aha! I thought I had diagnosed the case. My treatment is working."
To which she answered,
"You must not take all the credit to yourself, Doctor. Lucy's state this morning is due in part to me."
"How do you mean, ma'am?" asked the professor.
"Well, I was anxious about the dear child in the night and went into her room. She was sleeping soundly, so soundly that even my coming did not wake her. But the room was awfully stuffy. There were a lot of those horrible strong-smelling flowers about everywhere, and she had actually a bunch of them round her neck. I feared that the heavy odour would be too much for the dear child in her weak state, so I took them all away and opened a bit of the window to let in a little fresh air. You will be pleased with her, I am sure."
She moved off into her boudoir, where she usually breakfasted early. As she had spoken, I watched the professor's face and saw it turn ashen grey. He had been able to retain his self-command whilst the poor lady was present, for he knew her state and how mischievous a shock would be. He actually smiled on her as he held open the door for her to pass into her room. But the instant she had disappeared, he pulled me, suddenly and forcibly, into the dining room and closed the door. Then, for the first time in my life, I saw Van Helsing break down. He raised his hands over his head in a sort of mute despair, and then beat his palms together in a helpless way. Finally, he sat down on a chair, and putting his hands before his face, began to sob, with loud, dry sobs that seemed to come from the very racking of his heart. Then he raised his arms again, as though appealing to the whole universe.
"God, God, God," he said, "what have we done? What has this poor thing done that we are so sore beset? Is there fate amongst us still, sent down from the pagan world of old, that such things must be and in such way? This poor mother, all unknowing and all for the best as she think, does such thing as lose her daughter, body and soul, and we must not tell her, we must not even warn her, or she die, and then both die. Oh, how we are beset! How are all the powers of the devils against us?"
Suddenly he jumped to his feet.
"Come, we must see and act. Devils or no devils, or all the devils at once, it matters not. We fight him all the same."
He went to the hall door for his bag, and together we went up to Lucy's room. Once again, I drew up the blind whilst Van Helsing went towards the bed. This time, he did not even start as he looked on the poor face with the same awful, waxen pallor as before.
He wore a look of stern sadness and infinite pity.
"As I expected,"
he murmured with that hissing inspiration of his which meant so much. Without a word he went and locked the door, and then began to set out on the little table the instruments for yet another operation of transfusion of blood. I had long ago recognized the necessity and began to take off my coat, but he stopped me with a warning hand.
"No," he said, "today you must operate. I shall provide. You are weakened already."
As he spoke, he took off his coat and rolled up his shirt sleeve. Again the operation, again the narcotic, again some return of colour to the ashy cheeks and the regular breathing of healthy sleep. This time I watched whilst Van Helsing recruited himself and rested. Presently, he took an opportunity of telling Mrs. Westenra that she must not remove anything from Lucy's room without consulting him, that the flowers were of medicinal value, and that the breathing of their odour was part of the system of cure. Then he took over the care of the case himself, saying that he would watch this night and the next and would send me word when to come. After another hour, Lucy waked from her sleep, fresh and bright, and seemingly not much worse for her terrible ordeal. What does it all mean? I am beginning to wonder if my long habit of life amongst the insane is beginning to tell upon my own brain. Lucy Westenra's diary. 17th September. 4 days and nights of peace. I am getting so strong again that I hardly know myself. It is as if I had passed through some long nightmare and had just awakened to see the beautiful sunshine and feel the fresh air of the morning around me. I have a dim half-remembrance of long, anxious times of waiting and fearing, darkness in which there was not even the pain of hope to make present distress more poignant, and then long spells of oblivion, and the rising back to life as a diver coming up through a great press of water. Since, however, Dr. Van Helsing has been with me, all this bad dreaming seems to have passed away. The noises that used to frighten me out of my wits, the flapping against the windows, the distant voices which seemed so close to me, the harsh sounds that came from I know not where and commanded me to do I know not what, have all ceased. I go to bed now without any fear of sleep. I do not even try to keep awake. I have grown quite fond of the garlic, and a boxful arrives for me every day from Harlem. Tonight, Dr. Van Helsing is going away, as he has to be for a day in Amsterdam. But I need not be watched. I am well enough to be left alone. Thank God for Mother's sake, and dear Arthur's, and for all our friends who have been so kind. I shall not even feel the change, for last night Dr. Van Helsing slept in his chair a lot of the time. I found him asleep twice when I awoke, but I did not fear to go to sleep again, although the boughs or bats or something napped almost angrily against the window panes. The Pall Mall Gazette, 18th of September. The Escaped Wolf. Perilous adventure of our interviewer. Interview with the keeper in the Zoological Gardens. After many inquiries and almost as many refusals and perpetually using the words Pall Mall Gazette as a sort of talisman, I managed to find the keeper of the section of the Zoological Gardens in which the wolf department is included. Thomas Bilder lives in one of the cottages in the enclosure behind the elephant house and was just sitting down to his tea when I found him. Thomas and his wife are hospitable folk, elderly and without children, and if the specimen I enjoyed of their hospitality be of the average kind, their lives must be pretty comfortable. The keeper would not enter on what he called business until the supper was over and we were all satisfied. Then, when the table was cleared and he had lit his pipe, he said,
"Now, sir, you can go on and ask me what you want. You'll excuse me for refusing to talk of professional subjects afore meals. I gives the wolves and the jackals and the hyenas in all our section their tea afore I begins to ask them questions."
"How do you mean, ask them questions?" I queried, wishful to get him into a talkative humour.
"Hitting them over the head with a pole is one way. Scratching of their ears is another, when gents as is flush wants a bit of a show off to their gals. I don't so much mind the fuss. They hit 'em with a pole afore I chucks in their dinner, but I wait till they've had their sherry and coffee, so to speak, afore I tries on with the ear scratching. Mind you, he added philosophically, there's a deal of the same nature in us as in them there animals. Here's you a come in and asking of me questions about my business, and I, that grumpy like, that only for your blooming half quid I'd have seen you blowed fast for I'd answer. Not even when you asked me sarcastic like if I'd like you to ask the superintendent if you might ask me questions. Without offence, did I tell you to go to hell?
You did.
And when you said you'd report me for using of obscene language, that was hitting me over the head. But the half quid made that all right. I weren't a-going to fight, so I waited for the food and did with my owl as the wolves and lions and tigers does. But Lord love your heart, now that the old woman has stuck a chunk of her tea cake in me and rinsed me out with her blooming old teapot and I've lit up, you may scratch my ears for all you're worth and won't get even a growl out of me. Drive along with your questions. I know what you're coming at. That air escape wolf.
Exactly. I want you to give me your view of it. Just tell me how it happened, and when I know the facts, I'll get you to say what you consider was the cause of it, and how you think the whole affair will end.
All right, Governor. This here is about the old story. That air wolf that we call Persica was one of the three grey ones that come from Norway to Jamrax. He was a nice, well-behaved wolf that never gave no trouble to talk of. I'm more surprised at him for wanting to get out nor any other animal in the place. But there, you can't trust wolves no more than women.
Oh, you don't mind him, sir, broke in Mrs. Tom with a cheery laugh. He's got mind in the animal so long that blessed if he ain't like old wolf himself. But there ain't no harm in him.
Well, sir, it was about 2 hours after feeding yesterday when I first hear my disturbance. I was making up a litter in the monkey house for a young puma, which is ill. But when I heard the yelping and howling, I came away straight. There was Bursica, a-tearing like a mad thing at the bars as if he wanted to get out. There wasn't much people about that day, and close at hand was only one man, a tall thin chap with an hooked nose and a pointed beard with a few white hairs running through it. He had a hard, cold look and red eyes, and I took a sort of dislike to him, for it seemed as if it was him as they was irritated at. He had white kid gloves on his hands, and he pointed out the animals to me and says, "Keeper, these wolves seem upset at something."
"Maybe it's you," says I, for I did not like the airs as he gave himself. He didn't get angry as I hoped he would, but he smiled a kind of insolent smile with a mouth full of white, sharp teeth. "Oh, no, they wouldn't like me," he says. "Oh, yes, they would," says I, imitating of him. "They always like a bone or two to clean their teeth on about tea time, which you has a bag full." Well, it was a odd thing, but when the animals see us talking, they lay down, and when I went over to Bursica, he let me stroke his ears, same as ever. That there man came over, and blessed but if he didn't put in his hand and stroke the old wolf's ears too. "Take care," says I, "Bursica is quick." "Never mind," he says, "I'm used to him." "Well, are you in the business yourself?" I says, taking off me hat. For a man what trades in wolves, and Sarah, is a good friend to keepers. "No," says he, "not exactly in the business, but I have made pets of several." And with that, he lifts his hat as polite as a lord and walks away. Old Persica kept a looking after him till he was out of sight, and then went and lay down at a corner and wouldn't come out the whole evening. Well, last night, so soon as the moon was up, the wolves here all began howling. There weren't nothing for him to howl at. There weren't no one near, except someone that was evidently a-calling a dog somewheres out back of the gardenings in Park Road. Once or twice I went out to see that all was right, and it was. And then the howling stopped. Just before 12 o'clock, I just took a look round afore turning in, and bus me, but when I came opposite to old Bursica's cage, I see the rails broken and twisted about and the cage empty. And that's all I know for certain.
Did anyone else see anything?
One of our gardeners was a-coming home about that time from Harmony when he sees a big grey dog coming out through the garden hedges. At least, so he says. But I don't give him much for it myself, for if he did, he never said a word about it to his missus when he got home, and it was only after the escape of the wolf was made known, and we had all been up all night a-hunting of the park for Bursica, that he remembered seeing anything. My own belief was that the Harmony had got to his head.
Now, Mr. Builder, can you account in any way for the escape of the wolf?
Well, sir, he said, with a suspicious sort of modesty, I think I can, but I don't know as how you'd be satisfied with the theory.
Certainly I shall. If a man like you, who knows the animals from experience, can't hazard a good guess at any rate, who is even to try?
Well then, sir, I accounts for it this way. It seems to me that that air wolf escaped simply because he wanted to get out.
From the hearty way that both Thomas and his wife laughed at the joke, I could see that it had done service before, and that the whole explanation was simply an elaborate sell. I couldn't cope in badinage with the worthy Thomas, but I thought I knew a surer way to his heart, so I said, Now, Mr. Builder, we'll consider that first half-sovereign worked off, and this brother of his is waiting to be claimed when you've told me what you think will happen.
All right you are, sir, he said briskly. You'll excuse me, I know, for a chaffing of ye, but the old woman here winked at me, which was as much as telling me to go on.
Well, I never, said the old lady.
My opinion is this. That air wolf is hiding off somewheres. The gardener, what didn't remember, said he was a-galloping northward faster than an horse could go. But I didn't believe him, for you see, sir, wolves don't gallop no more nor dogs does. They not being built that way. Wolves is fine things in a storybook, and I dare say, when they gets in packs and does be chivying something that's more afeard than they is, they can make a devil of a noise and chop it up, whatever it is. But Lord bless you, in real life, a wolf is only a low creature, not half so clever or bold as a good dog, and not half a quarter so much fighting him. This one ain't been used to fighting or even to providing for hisself, and more like he's somewhere round the park, a-hiding and a-shivering of. And, if he thinks at all, wondering where he's to get his breakfast from. Or maybe he's got down some area and is in a coal cellar. My eye, won't some cook get a rum start when she sees his green eyes a-shining at her out of the dark? If he can't get food, he's bound to look for it, and mayhap he may chance to light on a butcher's shop in time. If he doesn't, and some nursemaid goes a-walking off with a soldier, leaving of the hinfant in the perambulator, well, then I shouldn't be surprised if the census is one babby the less. That's all.
I was handing him the half-sovereign when something came bobbing up against the window, and Mr. Builder's face doubled its natural length with surprise.
God bless me, he said, if there ain't old Bursica come back by hisself.
He went to the door and opened it, a most unnecessary proceeding, it seemed to me. I have always thought that a wild animal never looks so well as when some obstacle of pronounced durability is between us. A personal experience has intensified rather than diminished that idea. After all, however, there is nothing like custom, for neither Builder nor his wife thought any more of the wolf than I should of a dog. The animal itself was as peaceful and well-behaved as that father of all picture wolves, Red Riding Hood's quondam friend, whilst moving her confidence in masquerade. The whole scene was an unutterable mixture of comedy and pathos. The wicked wolf that for half a day had paralysed London and set all the children in the town shivering in their shoes was there in a sort of penitent mood, and was received and petted like a sort of vulpine prodigal son. Old Builder examined him all over with most tender solicitude, and when he had finished with his penitent, said,
There, I knew the poor chap would get into some kind of trouble, didn't I say it all along? Here's his head, all cut and full of broken glass. He's been getting over some blooming wall or other. It's a shame that people are allowed to top their walls with broken bottles. This here's what comes of it. Come along, Bursica.
He took the wolf and locked him up in a cage with a piece of meat that satisfied, in quantity at any rate, the elementary conditions of the fatted calf, and went off to report. I came off too to report the only exclusive information that is given today regarding the strange escapade at the zoo. The music on the podcast is by Andrew Rothman. For more information, go to arothman.com. And so there we are, ladies and gentlemen. That was Dracula episode 16. How did you get on with Mr. Builders? Easy, you all cry. Well, that's wonderful to hear. And if not, well, as I suggested earlier, you can always listen again with the text online. And that will, probably, clear it all up for you. I'll be back next week with the next episode of Underwood and Flinch Underground. Not early in the week, I have to add, because I'm away at a wedding in England this weekend, so I'll be out of action for a few days. And then there's also the possibility that the woodworm people might have to come round early in the week to do our attic. Yes, we've discovered there's woodworm in the attic. Not very nice, but what can you do? Well, you get a person in to kill them all, which is exactly what we've done. But anyway, I won't be able to do any work with them clumping around over my head. So I'm going to try to put them off until Thursday or Friday, if I can. Give myself a few days' run at the recording before they come round and poison everything. Anyway, one way or the other, though, I will be back in your ears next week. So, until then, my friends, thanks for listening, and thanks for your awesome patronage. But from me for now, it's pip pip and cheerio.